955.
Okay, Mr. Reed, to the Honorable Mr. Reed, the witness will conduct your hearing at this time, sir. So just hold on, sir.
Sir, you're a little bit faint. You can't hardly hear.
Okay, the Honorable Mr. Reed, the witness will conduct the hearing, and so the next voice you will hear will be the Honorable Mr. Reed, the witness. Could you hear me that time, sir?
I can hear you. Can you state your name and ADC number for the record?
Richard Joseph Reed, 106955.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-4-12-A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today in the room. And I'll begin with the opposite side of where I'm sitting, but we have closest to you, the Honorable Mr. David Neal. At the seventh bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. My name is Luis Quinones, and I will be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin with the following summary. Mr. Richard Ruiz, ADC number 106955, is 48 years old. The crime of murder in the first degree occurred on or about November 22, 1993. He was approximately 22 years old at the time of the incident offense. Does this sound correct so far, sir?
Yes, sir.
He was also on probation for a narcotics violation. He pled no contest and was sentenced to 25 years to life imprisonment on July 22, 1994. In addition, he was convicted for one count of armed robbery and one count of flight from a law enforcement vehicle. Both prison terms, 21 years and 4 years respectively, have since expired. He has a criminal history, which includes other arrests for assault and burglary. It should be noted that the incident offense represents an escalation in violence. I'll read a summary of the current offense in question. On November 22, 1993, Mr. Reese murdered David Mila. Shortly after midnight, gunshots were heard. Witnesses observed the victim's body being thrown out of his taxi, and Mr. Reese fled the scene in the victim's taxi. About 3 hours later, he was arrested following a police chase. He was charged and offered the opportunity to plead to no contest to the crimes involved in exchange for the state dropping the death penalty allegation. And that is just a short version of the offense, sir. According to Mr. Reese's institutional progress report, he has had extensive programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. He has a relief plan, which includes family support, in employment at a family-owned business, and continued programming. He's had significant disciplinary issues from 1994 through 2018, with his last ticket a minor for violating department rules on October 18, 2018. There's also a long list of AIMS notations regarding security threat groups. This appears to be his first hearing before the board. We have no letters of support in his parole request packet, although we do have supporters in the room today. Thank you. And just for the sake of having making note of this, Mr. Reese, you do have supporters in the room. It's not necessarily more important that you have a letter or be here. It's very good that you're here today, so thank you. We also have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office dated April 8, 2019, which opposes parole. Sir, this is the first opportunity for the board to get to know you. Could you please tell us about the offenses that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, Mr. Reese.
When all this happened, I was just a kid. I was 22 years old. I didn't know what was going on. I don't really have a lot to say. I know what I did was wrong. I know I can't take it back. I know there's nothing I can do to change that. I've been here all these years. All I can do is wait on what you want to say.
Well, thank you for being so direct. I do have some questions that I'd like to review, and then how this is going to work is the board members will be given a chance to ask you questions, and then your supporters will be given the opportunity to speak before the board as well.
Okay.
It looks like that you received a lot of programming inside the Arizona Department of Corrections. Was it useful for you, or did you find it meaningful?
Yes, sir. Some of it, most of it, yes. Just something that everybody goes to, something everybody talks about, something that helps everyone.
You submitted a strong release plan, and you made mention of family support. Was that correct, that there is a business owned by a family member?
Not only, but he's in a good position to bear me whenever I get out there.
Very good. And what was that job again, sir?
It has something to do with rock construction, foundation.
That certainly sounds promising.
I have done it before also, so it's not something new. I'm just going out there hoping for the best. I think we'll all do when we get there.
It looks like that you've had a significant amount of discipline going back from 1994. It's about a page and a half with some majors. And you had a major in 2007 and 2008, and then there was a long period, a good 7 years, that you went without discipline, and then you've had three minors since 2015. Although, considering that it's 2019, it's three minors over the course of 4 years, so I think that's meaningful. But it seems that prior to 2007, you had quite a few tickets. So what was going on with you leading up to that, and what caused this change in your behavior?
Just growing up, I'm older, slower, and just tired of all the messing around.
We're very careful about questions relating to security threat groups, only because we have to think about your security, and there's always the question of how accurate the information is because it's intelligence, and we're careful. But
yes,
if I'm not mistaken, you stepped down, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And
I didn't step out. It was a program, a step-down program, yes, sir. And I did complete it, but I didn't come back from that.
You did what, sir? You completed it?
I did complete this step-down program, yes, sir.
You didn't, or you did?
I did.
Okay, you did. Pardon me. I'm not trying to play games with the way you speak, but sometimes it's not clear with the audio here. So what inspired you to step down?
I was just trying to get my life together, just on my growing up.
And have you been able to stay away from prison politics since then, sir?
Pretty much, yes, sir. I mean, it's all around me, but, I'm in my own.
I can't help but be curious about your case. This is not a trial, but what did inspire you to do this crime back when you were, I guess, 22 years old? How did you get involved in this situation? What led to this?
It was just being out with a bunch of people. I was not only one in that situation when we went down. There was more than one person in that car. There was a lot of us just drunk, young, nothing mattered to look around but get in trouble. And yeah, you know, I can't do anything about it to change it. All I can do is work on it. You know, wasn't something I planned to do, it happened.
It was a pretty violent event, so were you involved with just your friends? Were you involved in gangs? What was going on?
Well, it was just friends, all together drinking, and it just whatever happened, happened.
Did you foresee that night that your friends might be involved in killing somebody? I mean, it's a pretty serious offense.
No, sir, I don't think anybody did it. Just something would happen. It happened.
Well, can you explain your role? You said there was more than one person. How did you fit into the crime?
I was in the backseat. I was the one who did whatever. I was the one who shot the guy.
And what was the motivation for shooting him?
At the time, there wasn't any motivation. It was just being young, dumb, drunk. It was, there's no excuse for it. It just happened. Something I can never change.
Did any of your friends get arrested and convicted as well?
No, sir.
Why are you the only one that faced charges?
It's just the way it went down.
Meaning that you were separated from your friends when...
They went one way, I went the other. I got caught, I did the time.
You have had a few minor violations since 2015. So it seems that you've settled down some inside the Department of Corrections, but it's still a concern when someone has had discipline with their parole eligibility coming so close. Oftentimes, we see individuals really recognize that there's light at the end of the tunnel and they really need to account for themselves. So I recognize that these are majors, but how did it come to be that you ended up getting tickets after 2015?
I think they're all minors. I think for having a light cover, you can get up the light in front of your room because it stays on all day. Messes with your eyes, like good enough. I think they passed by, told everybody came down. I was probably asleep or having my headphones on. Didn't hear them, but they didn't send me a walk. I got found in. Got put on to report. Usually, I don't give none of the staff any kind of problems. Even when I'm not doing good or having family or whatever else, they'll then do their job. I do what I got to do. And I listen to them. The first time they tell me if I hear it or if I want to hear it, I don't give them a good trouble. I don't give them no problems. I'm respectful. I don't get out of line with them. I just do my time. I think my last major, I think the two or three majors that I have had, I think all the rest of them are like minors or just when I first came down, it was in 94, 95, I was young. There was a lot of stuff going on in prison back then. There was a lot of, you know, just trying to get people around and getting them pushed around, you know, not looking out for the cops, which I don't do anymore. I mean, just stuff that when I first come down, they're trying to I had a lot of time to do. I didn't want to just come around and I basically had to make my name for myself, if you can understand that.
Well, I can't say that it's completely easy to understand, because I have been in prison, and I can imagine what it would be a frightening experience to be in an environment where everyone could be a threat to you personally. So I think there's a good reason why it's referred to prison politics. It sounds just like that. But we also see individuals who manage to stay away from it. And I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I'm equally interested as to how they're able to stay away from it, because it seems like the influence is very strong. But it's not shocking to see that individuals have been involved in prison politics. I think there was a notation that one of your most recent steps in the process of the stepping down program was in 2017. So are you still in a process, or still in the program, or where are you at now?
I'm not in the program anymore. I did make it to the yard. I will come back. Kites for my name. They came, they made them remember, and they brought me back on the team cluster. It's changing, and everybody's just there. And all we have to do is go to the motion to try to get back in.
Okay, so you intend to go through the process again?
I have no choice. I mean, it's a best thing, you know?
Well, that's a good attitude. I certainly appreciate that. I'm going to ask my fellow board members, if they have any questions for you. Yes, Mr. Neal.
A couple things. So, excuse me. All right. So you were on probation when this happened?
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you said that there were other people involved, and they went one way and you went the other way, but you drove the taxiway, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you tell the authorities or other people that helped you commit that robbery?
Well, it wasn't a robbery. We didn't rob the guy. I mean, it happened. So he just got what happened.
Like the letter from the county attorneys.
In the police report, there's when we took people to a certain place. That's how they found out who I was, where I was, whatever, and I came to prison for it.
Right. Well, I mean, there was 21 years for armed robbery and 4 years for flight from law enforcement vehicle, along with the murder, and those other two have been expired. So, I have another thing. You were in Max. I mean, there was a couple of times in and out for a little while, but you were basically in maximum security until 2004. You got media in custody, and then in 2007, you were on close 26 and 2006, 2007, you were in close custody, but looked like you got hurt or got sick because you had some infirmary time, but you went back to maximum security where you've been since then. Why, when you got out of Max, did you end up going back? Because usually it's somebody, they work their way up to a point of getting into lesser custody, doesn't go back to Max unless they have some kind of a problem. What happened to send you back to Max?
They STG'd me from the day I got out of the hospital. I've been in surgery and everything. And when I did come out of there, they put me in a Cimarron for a year to get in the hospital ward. From there, they STG'd me and came over here. I've been here ever since. It's been at least 14, 15 years.
Okay. So, the time while you were, when you were in,
Yeah, it was October of '04, you went to media in custody.
Yes, sir.
And then you were, went to close in September of '06. And then through the infirmary time, which was, you went back to close custody for a while. Then it says in February of '08, to the jail detention. But then the next month you went to maximum security. So how did you hurt your back?
Well, working out, a little injuries. I used to lift them on the end when they were missing my back. Never went to the doctor, never went to see anything about it. Just moving back down. As I got older, when I started was working out, my blood just changing from my back. And then I think I got that MRSA in my back. They had to do surgery.
Okay. But it's still, I mean, I don't quite understand why there was 3 years of not non-maximum security when you went back to max. So, okay, well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Dr. Wright?
Yes, sir.
Let me just ask this a couple of questions, sir. Now, back to the incident offense itself. Okay, you don't want to refer to it as being a robbery, but what did you have a weapon on you? Or did you have a weapon on you at the time of the offense itself, sir?
Yes, sir, but the weapon
wasn't
mine.
Was it? Did it end up in your hand? Did you actually shoot it, or somebody else shot the victim?
I shot him.
So how did the weapon end up in your hand, sir?
It just did. It was arguments in the back seat. I ran up with it. That's what happened.
So this was a taxi, I think. So what was the goal? I mean, were you trying to get some money from the driver? What was going on there, sir?
I had money, sir. It was not a robbery. It was just arguments with people in the back seat that just escalated and got out of control and things happened. Like I said, there's nothing I can do to change that. I've done it all these years. Every day I did it. You know, I do my best not to be in trouble. I do my best to mind my own business. I do my best to be respectful of others. You know, it's something that I
needed
and I cannot take back.
Okay, we recognize that. We're just trying to make sure that we have a better understanding of exactly what happened in as much as someone was murdered. So let me ask it this way. Maybe you don't want to respond to it. Was this an accident? I'm just trying to figure out how did the gun go off and hit this... hit the victim. That's the only thing I'm trying to do at the moment, sir. You said it was not a robbery, therefore I take your word for that. It was not a robbery. So, y'all, those of you who were in the back seat, something went, and how did the gun, I'm just trying to figure out how did the person in the front seat get shot?
It was being taken from somebody, and they were trying to keep it, I was trying to take it, and we ended up going to the room and getting shot, fired off. I was the same size as I am now, and when that happened, we got one way. The best thing for me was to get the car and get off. It was already done, I was looking at it. I didn't know what to do, to be honest with you.
And I know that we've seen, excuse me, sir, go ahead.
It happened so fast that, you know, I was just trying to get over.
That was going to be my next question. I know you read the pre-sentence report, but so you took the car, the cab, and so what happened to the driver? Did you pull him out and drive the car home? What did you do, sir? What happened?
When it did happen, everybody took off. I got the guy, I got out of the car, I went to the driver's seat, opened the door, I pulled him out, left him out, and took off.
And where did you go? Did you go home or somewhere else, sir?
I was trying to go home, yes, sir. Didn't make it. I don't know why I was trying to go home. I guess I just want to see my family before whatever happened was going to happen.
May I just ask another question? You haven't answered, but I just want to make sure that I understood. You answered it for Mr. Gowanus. It relates to your step down. Now, you have to start all the way back over there with your step down program. I mean, you went through it and you got close to the end of it, but in order to step down, you're going to have to start all the way back over, sir?
To step down the program, I already did complete it. When I went to the yard, they had to slow from here to the yard. A kite got found. They had my name and number on it. So they violated me. Now I'm back here. So if they let me get back in the program, then yes, I would have to go through all of it again, which would take 2 years. I would have to go through all that all over again. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that I understood. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure that I understood what was going on there. And once again, and I think you've told us this, and I think we've read it as well, but I just want to hear from you, that what happened that they felt that you violated that resulted in the step-down program, that you actually, that there was a violation. What actually happened, sir?
They found
the
pipe, then I had wrote to somebody, telling them to stay in trouble, get in school, get a job and all that. Thing is at the bottom of the comment, it had my name and everything that they needed to violate. And then anything they had told us when we got them, any kites or any kites they got from anybody else, with my name on it, or my nickname on it, that was automatic violation, that would be coming back. So that's what that's all about right there. It wasn't for, finding, it wasn't for getting high, it wasn't for being disrespectful to staff, it was for a kite that I sent to a family member, for him not to get involved with the drugs, for him not to get involved with the liquor, for him to stay in school, get a job, do something with his life while he was there instead of getting involved with everything else. And I wound up coming back.
Okay,
sir. Because I have my name.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, thank you so very much, and thank you so very much, Mr. Gowanus, sir.
Thank you.
Dr. Wright. Mr. Reese?
Yes, sir.
Just a quick follow-up question on your history, too. You were on probation for a narcotics violation.
Yes, sir.
We're not here for that, but what was, in short, what was that charge?
It was, I was selling. I wasn't using it, I was making money.
And what sort of drug were you selling?
Rock cocaine. Mm-hmm. And I think I had some marijuana, but that was personal use.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir, we're getting close to the end of the hearing. It's time that we ask your supporters if they wish to speak before the board. So how many people want to speak today? All three of you, okay. I will ask that you limit your statements to about 3 minutes or so, unless it's something really extensive. My point is that we certainly don't want to be repeating things or making statements that are excessive. We only need sufficient information. So we'd like to come up first. Thank you. State your name at the microphone.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Mary. My last name is Ruiz. I am Richard's mother.
Thank you. And what would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
Well, first of all, thank you for letting this day come. 12 days ago, I found out that my son was going to come before a clemency board for the first time in all the years that he had been there, which really didn't give me a whole lot of time to prepare for things, but because I tried to live a better life, I stay in contact with people that are church members, people that are hardworking, that my kids have gone to school, graduated, all that. So us as a family, we're here to support him in any way we can, as mentally, physically, spiritually, financially, sir. I have letters from people and that are willing to take time to mentor him, because that is a big transition, sir. That is a big transition. And we want to work it so that he can transition as smoothly as possible. And you gentlemen know that's hard. But with the right people under you, and he knows in his heart why he's changed. We've lost a lot of family members since my son's been gone. That changes a person, sir. Growing up changes a person, sir. Having somebody that you know loves you and needs you, that changes a person, sir. I just want to say I am here to support him 110%. And as long as the Lord gives me breath, I will be there for him.
Thank you, Mark. A quick question. It sounds like you're very involved with your faith community.
That is true, sir.
Where are you from in Phoenix?
I'm sorry?
Where are you from in Phoenix?
Central Phoenix.
And?
I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah.
Which faith community?
I am actually a Christian. I was born and raised a Catholic, but as I grew up, I changed, you know. I've gone to different churches. I go to different churches because I want to hear different things, you know.
I only ask because I'm just interested. You sound like a very faithful person, and I wasn't sure if that was a big part of your relationship with your son.
That is a big part of my relationship with my son, is to, like I said, to know him. I'm almost 70 years old, sir. I have gone through a lot of things in my life, and I have learned a lot of things in my life. And only by the grace of God do I stand here today before you. Only by the grace of God, because I too, you know, we all have to learn somehow, somewhere. And that is my testimony, that I will continue to try to pass that on to my son. Not only me, but his whole family, and even people that are maybe not blood related, that are here to speak for him today, that will house him, that will help him. And that's the big thing that I'm talking about, the transition thing. He's going to need his whole, all of us, to help him, to guide him and direct him, so that he can become the man that he needs to be. My son's a good man.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions? Thank you for appearing for the board today.
Yes, sir. And I also have letters.
Oh, yes. Just know that if you give us a letter, we'll attach it to the file that you won't receive it back.
That's fine.
Okay,
do I return to you?
Yes, if you can. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just give me 1 second and we'll keep going.
Good morning.
Can you state your name?
Yes, my name is Stephen Acuna. I'm a home director at the Victory Outreach Men's Recovery Home. With your permission, I'd like to submit a letter to the
press. You may as well. Thank you.
I know we have limited time, so what I'm here to offer is an opportunity for Mr. Ruiz. They've granted the permission for parole. Where we are is we're a recovery home for men, and we house them, whether they're coming out of incarceration, coming out of homelessness, drug life, gang life, whatever walk of life they may be coming from, seeking help. We're very successful in helping men that come from incarceration transition back into society to become functioning members. We have testimonies of men that have come that were actually involved with, you know, politics in prison and have been able to transform their lives, to turn away from the lifestyle, to get a job, whether they had families or not, to be reunited with them, or just to begin them in general. But I myself, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, lived a similar life involved in gangs, involved in drugs, alcohol. I gave my life to the ministry at the age of 29. I'm 37 today. Since then, I've been able to remain sober. I have a beautiful wife and two beautiful children, and I've been able to help others. That's why I have a passion and a heart for what we do in our ministry. But we have been very effective, not only nationally within our country. We started in Los Angeles, have moved across the East Coast, and currently have 700 churches, not only in the country, but in 30 other countries as well. We're doing new works in Panama and in Amsterdam with similar inner city places that have drugs, gangs, violence, and things of that nature. But what we offer when Mr. Ruiz gets out is a place to live. He's fed there. He has a bed there. We do counseling throughout the day as needed with them. And through time, we help them to transition into a living facility outside of the home, whether they live with their family, they got their own residence, getting a job, and things of that nature. But I do believe that if we were given the opportunity, we would definitely do our best to work with them. We have a facility right down the street on Central, just towards the Indian School. We have about 15 guys that are there right now. We're able to house about 24, so we have plenty of room and plenty of support that would be available to them.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any questions from fellow board members?
So you're international, I mean, the Victor Outreach, this is the international program that we hear so much about.
Yes, sir.
And what was your role with that, sir?
I'm the home director, and my wife, we co-labor together. We actually have both of our children there, which helps to create a family atmosphere, but we are both directors of the home.
And just from my memory, and this is what has nothing to do with the hearing, but it does in a real sense. Now, who's in charge of the program here in Arizona, the Victor Outreach?
For our location, it's Pastor Sam Kiyocho. He also went through prison, lived a gang life, was able to escape drug addiction, but he's the pastor of our ministry, our church.
Okay, and that's the one that's at 4333 North Center Avenue.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how long have you been associated with the program?
I came into the church in 2012, and for 8 years I've been with the ministry, 4 years I've been directing the home. Okay. I'm on my fifth year right now.
Just for my information, what's the home like? Now, what happens there at the home? When someone comes in for the first time, what do they do, and how do you operate, sir?
We are a 24-hour ministry, so we live on campus with the men. We have a schedule up, so daily there's different activities, assignments, group sessions that take place. For example, let's just say today, we wake up at about 7 a.m. 7:30, we begin Bible reading. We do prayer devotions with the guys. They get into breakfast and chores, and then throughout the day, we give them different assignments, curriculum, similar to what he's gone through in there, but more focused on his needs individually. We help to counsel them and guide them just to turn away from the life that they live and turn into a life where we teach them how to be upstanding citizens, how to be a family man, whether it's marriage, family, with children. But we try to coach them and guide them, even when we know that coming from prison life, it's not going to be an automatic, okay, welcome back to life, and now you're going to live a good life. We know it's going to take time, it's going to take process, so we help coaching them when they get a job, how to budget their finances, to be responsible, to obey all of the, I know when they come out the parole, they have a lot of needs that they need to take care of, and we coach them and help them make sure that they are at every meeting that is required, that they're meeting all the financial responsibilities that they're entitled to, and things of that nature.
I commend you on the program. Now you, so they actually live there. They actually live with, and you live with them as a leader. You,
yes,
the director. You're right there with them. About how many do you have at the moment?
Right now we have 15.
Yeah, 15.
Yes. Okay. We're able to house 24, but we have 15. It's a very structured program, so sometimes with a turnaround rate, majority of the times the guys that come from incarceration are a little bit more familiar with the structure. Guys that come off the street are, digging there a little bit more. It takes time to come back and forth until they finally understand that this is something that's going to help them.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I've heard of it, but I just wanted to. Thank you, the first person now. Actually,
thank you. You're
part of it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. I think you need to speak.
put your name with us.
Yeah, I would like to share that.
I am Richard Reese's sister.
Good morning.
And, yes, I am, and he has, his another brother and another sister, two other brothers and a sister. I attend church with my daughter. She's a Sunday school teacher. She wrote a letter for her uncle. Everyone's been waiting for this day, and we thank you to give, you know, giving him the opportunity to come here to the board. And we're just hoping that he can meet all the requirements and rules that he needs to meet so that he can come home. And we attend church. I work for a hospital. My daughter works for a hospital. I'm sure there's job opportunities there, although I am not a supervisor or anything like that. My kids attend college. I have two that attend college, and that would be one of the opportunities, is to try to help him go back to school and find work. And I'm just very hopeful for him, and we're very excited about him coming home. So in whatever way we can help him, we'll be there to support him. And thank you. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Any questions from fellow board members? Thank you for appearing for the board today.
Thank you.
Can I say something?
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, we're getting close to the end of the hearing, and let me begin before you say anything. We're getting close to the end of the hearing, and I was just about to ask you if there is a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion. We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. But this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before the board goes into discussion? Thank you, Mr. Reese.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to thank you all for being here, for coming to me today. I'd also like to thank the pastor and my mom, my sister, for showing up. I'm ready for changes. I'm tired of this one.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. You strike me as a person of few words. Everyone's different, but is there anything else you'd like to say before we go into discussion?
No, sir. Just thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, especially if this is your first time before the board, because you're not used to the process. But it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just remain and listen in, because we want you to listen in, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. So thank you, Mr. Reese.
Thank you.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I want to begin by stating that I certainly commend where Mr. Reese has arrived in his rehabilitation. I know that he's taken quite a bit of programming. He has some really good support from family and community. And it sounds like that he's put some effort into dealing with prison politics issues. I have some concerns about where he's at, and I want to stay positive. I think he's on a path. I think he's moving in the right direction. Many individuals who appear before this board the first time are not always ready for transition to home arrest or regular parole. And I stated this earlier in an unrelated manner, but sometimes it's a bit of a challenge to the inmate to let them know, on one hand, they're encouraged, but on the other hand, that they may not quite be ready for that change. I know he says that he's had enough of the lifestyle, right? I appreciate that. But I think it's also fair to say what I haven't heard very much in the way of remorse for the victim himself. It's almost like the victim at this point is really not a person. I know that Mr. Reese is a person of few words, and I'm certainly not trying to turn on him, but I think it's something to really consider. You asked him to account for the event in and of itself. He's not denying that he was involved, but it does seem a bit vague. And I think a crime of this level rises above the level of just the event just happening or things just happening. So I want to begin this discussion with encouragement from Mr. Reese, but again, I'm just not sure if he's ready for supervised release, but that's where I will begin the discussion. Thank you. Mr. Neal.
I agree with you, man. I don't really think he's taking ownership of the situation as it was, the full ownership of it, because, like you say, it's awfully vague, and there are other people involved, but they went a different direction, so he didn't say anything about it, and the explanation of the crime was just very lacking, I think. I don't think he's quite to the point to transition back to the community yet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Wright.
Sir, I agree with my distinguished colleagues, sir.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. And that is regarding Mr. Richard Blank. Get my speaking in order. Regarding Mr. Richard Reese, ADC number 106955, my motion is to deny regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. And based on the year of the offense, I'm asking for a 1 year set off, and that is my motion.
Second. Agree.
Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal, agreed by the Honorable Dr. Wright. He asked for 1 year set off. Release type denied is regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. Reasons for denial are as follows: serious and vile offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, violation of previous probation, prior criminal history, poor institutional behavior, recent disciplinary infraction. I recognize it was a minor, but we did have a minor in 2018. And I think that will complete the reasons for denial. Do we have any other additions from fellow board members? Okay, Mr. Reese, the board has voted. You are denying regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And based on the rules of the board for the year of your conviction, we're asking for a 1 year set off. Did you understand the reasons for denial?
Yes, sir.
Well, we hope that you take it as encouragement. We recognize it's been a long journey for you, but it's something to really think about. The gravity of the offense that you were involved in. I know that you're going through the step down process again, and we do wish you the best in that. Hopefully there's also a learning that comes with that, and a continued maturity, and another step towards your rehabilitation. We do appreciate that you have family and community support, and personally I think you show promise. This is not about hopelessness at this stage. but you are a first-time candidate for parole or home arrest, let alone absolute discharge, and it can be a process sometimes. So please take this as encouragement. We encourage you to continue with your programming, your rehabilitation, and to stay safe, and we look forward to seeing you again before this board.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. This will bring our hearing to a close, and we want to thank everyone who came to support Mr. Reese today. Best wishes.
Thank you.